Chapter 5. In 1943, the whole world was at war, and the house on Chester Street was no exception. Harry and Rose argued all the time about what to do about 13-year-old Abby, what to do with Natty while they sought help for Abby, how to make more money, and especially about who Rose was seeing. The man who fixed the stove came almost daily, although the stove seemed to work just fine. Rose visited the optometrist down the block almost every day, staying an hour or so. Sometimes she also visited the school principal, although neither Natty nor Abby had trouble in school. Harry wondered what happened during these visits, since Rose was not what she appeared. In bed, Rose was usually frigid and distant. Flirtation, even with Harry, was a mask. He wondered whether the other men simply worshipped her for her looks, as he did. Rose confronted Harry the day after Abby hid the snake in the bathroom to torment Natty. "I need to take Abby away," she said. "She needs help. I can't get it for her here." "It's you, Rose. It's you. You give her too much attention. You're feeding into her behavior." "You always say that, but you're wrong. She needs help. Laura told me there's a place she knows in Ohio that can help Abby. You're working, so I'll take Natty to Cleveland with Abby and me." "What does Laura know? You listen to whatever she, or what anyone else for that matter, tells you. You never listen to what I tell you." "Laura knows. She knows everyone." Harry walked from the room, newspaper dangling from his right hand. He suddenly turned. "Are you leaving me, Rose? Does this mean you're leaving me? Taking the children away from me? You know I don't want you to leave me. Anyway, you're wrong about Abby. She needs discipline, not for you to go chasing around because Laura told you to." He didn't wait for an answer, but hurriedly put on his shabby long black coat and a fedora that had seen better days and shuffled to the door. He let himself out and escaped to the furniture store. He knew Rose wouldn't leave today. She had calls to make and clothes to buy with Laura's money, so she could look stylish when she saw her relatives in Cleveland and the doctor who knows where. As he walked, Harry thought about Rose's odd relationship with Laura. He remembered her telling him how they'd met. The girls were very young. Natty was a baby and Abby a toddler. Rose liked to take them on walks with Natty in the baby carriage, and Abby walking slowly alongside. She said she loved to look at other houses on Chester Street and compare them with her own. She'd stopped in front of a two-family home she especially liked. Laura was outside planting flowers. "Hello there," Rose had called to her. "Oh, hello," Laura had said, looking up. Rose had described her as short and broad in the hips with thick brown hair. "We're taking our daily walk. I'm Rose. This is Natty in the carriage and Abby, my big girl." The two had been inseparable ever since. Rose was always reporting what Laura thought, what she did, and how much money she had. Harry had been glad Rose had a friend in the neighborhood, but Laura had become a parasite, taking every opportunity to interfere with their lives. Laura's husband had died young of tuberculosis, leaving her and her cantor father to raise two young children. Harry thought she might have hastened her husband's death with her manipulative gargoyle-like hovering. Rose seemed to love Laura more than she loved him. Worse yet, she seemed to enjoy having Laura control her life and make her decisions for her. Maybe it was his own fault. Harry always told her, "Rose, you can't decide between chocolate and vanilla." "What's she after?" Harry often asked Rose. "Why is she always offering you money?" "Why don't you like her? She's so good to us. Remember when she saved Natty's life paying for the sofa we couldn't afford?" said Rose. "She's bought furniture and the new stove and icebox. You should be grateful." "I don't like that she tells you what to do and buys us things. Let her buy things for her own family," responded Harry. She even brought the kosher sink you said you had to have. I hate it. It's so big. It takes up most of the kitchen. I give in on a lot of things, Rose, but not on that. I was raised kosher. So were you, for that matter. Would you rather drain and salt the meat in a tiny sink? Harry felt emasculated by Laura's generosity. He was selling furniture out of what was essentially a junk shop. The owner, John Bard, probably figured a former attorney would make a good salesman. People seem to think lawyers can talk people into or out of just about anything, Harry thought. Bard arranged for the shipments, and Harry ran the store and sold the strange, obscure furniture brought to New York by the Lackawanna Railway. Who'd think people would want to buy used furniture? No one's making new home furniture anymore. It's going to the war. But who wants oddball stuff? They want dressers and sofas, thought Harry. He enjoyed watching Natty when she came to the store. She loved the small wooden end table carved like an elephant, with tusks carrying a wooden tray on its back. She also liked to chat with the reclining ceramic Indian. Nobody else seemed to want them, except Natty. As Harry walked to the furniture store, he mulled over the morning's conversation. Abby might be all right if Rose were home with the children instead of working 6 days a week, he thought. The furniture store wasn't making any money. They were paying more to buy stuff than he was earning from selling it. No one wanted what he was selling. People have no imagination, he thought. Without Rose's income and the extra ration coupons she got because of being a nurse, they would be homeless and starving. Her family in Cleveland would take her and the children in, but not him. He knew she loved her relatives more than she loved him. They gave her things, especially Bob, who always seemed to be rolling in cash. In Cleveland, she'd be treated like a queen, worshipped by her brothers and cousins, admired by strange men, and relieved of Natty so she could schlep Abby all over Ohio. As he passed Weissman's grocery and the Silverrod candy store, Harry was glad that he had enough influence left with Rose to make sure that she and his daughters never went into either establishment. According to Rose, Weissman put his finger on the scale when he weighed the meat and produce. Harry told her to walk another 2 blocks to Bernstein's. Irving Bernstein kept a large account book in which he noted every purchase and its price. Every Friday when Rose got paid, she went by Bernstein's to pay the bill. Harry insisted on it. He didn't approve of debt. Silverrod's was just 5 houses away from Harry's house. Most of the guys from Murder Incorporated who used to hang out there were dead or in prison, but he still hated the bastards for what they'd done to him. Now other criminals hung out at Silverrod's, posing a constant threat to everyone in the neighborhood. Harry was sure Rose had flirtations with some of these men, but was determined to prevent his daughters from associating with them. Natty and Abby loved the shelves of candy arrayed outside in front of the store, but Harry wouldn't let them sit at its soda fountain. Harry walked past the 5 houses, Silverrod's, the chain link fence, the bar and the trolley depot. The trolley made its way to and from all parts of Brooklyn and turned around at the depot. It also spent the night there. Sometimes Harry thought he'd like to get on it, just ride, and never get off. The men who worked in the rail yard and on the trolley hung out at the bar. Harry didn't go there, although it was close to home. He'd spent too many evenings as a teenager pulling his father out of bars. He already had enough problems. He wished he could buy the girls ice cream from the good humor man who came through the neighborhood every day in the summer. But an ice cream cone or cream soda cost a nickel. Harry didn't know it, but when he was at work, Laura, Rose, Natty, and Abby picked out their favorite treats from the white truck, while music that sounded like a circus emanated from behind the driver's seat. Harry laughed to himself when he thought of the chain link fence. One evening, when he was walking home from the store, a man emerged from the bar and tapped him on the shoulder. "Hey, Harry," he'd said. Harry recognized him, just barely, as one of the men who worked on the trolley. "Hey, Harry," the guy said again. "Is that your little Goyle, the one with the black hair, cute as a button, great giggle?" "I have two little girls. What's it to you?" "Oh, nothing. I don't mean no trouble, Harry. It's just that we like to make bets while we're drinking after a hard day's work. We stick the slips in the fence, you see?" "No, I'm not following you. What's that got to do with my girls?" Harry asked, growing suspicious. "Well, you see, Harry, it's like this. We stick the bets in the fence links, and your little Goyle pulls them out. Seems like she thinks there's some kind of game. She rips them up and throws them in the air." Harry had to chuckle. It was so like Natty, his youngest, to view life as a game. He hoped she never knew otherwise, especially considering what was happening to the Jews in the old country. At least the girls did not have to worry about that. Otherwise, Harry felt powerless, incapable of dealing with a demanding wife who made decisions based on what her best friend told her to do, a failing business, and a sick daughter. Harry's thoughts turned back to his argument with Rose. He knew she would have her way and take the children to Cleveland. She hadn't invited him to go, of course, and probably knew he never would. Being in the same state with Bob, let alone the same house, would destroy whatever self-respect he still had. He knew Rose saw him as a failure as a husband and provider. She couldn't fault him as a father, though. He did his best to give Abby and Natty attention and affection, and shared his passions with them as much as they'd let him. Natty was easy to be with and eager to spend time with him. They were both interested in the wider world and had a love of books. He tried being close with Abby as well, but he couldn't seem to reach her. She was more introverted than any of them, as if she hid the secret to what might make her happy and normal. He tried to draw her out, but she barely seemed to notice him. Maybe if Rose and the girls went away for a while without him, he would have the time to find other ways of making money. He was an analytical man. He would have to think this over very carefully. Harry watched Rose write her Thursday letter. She wrote to one or another of her brothers every Thursday. This time, it was to Bob. May 25, 1943. "Dear Bob, Abby isn't feeling well. I'm planning to take her to see specialists in Cleveland. Harry is no help. He goes to the store every day, but I don't think anyone buys anything. He's always sad or mad at me. I need a break. Can you help me find a little apartment for us? It'll just be me and the girls, preferably near schools. Is there anything close to you? Abby's in junior high, but I'm not sure how much time she'll be in school. She gets worse by the day. I can't bear it. Natty's still in primary school. Harry will stay here. He has to work. I hope he takes care of himself, but I doubt it. You know Harry. Let me know what you find. All my love, Rose." Harry watched Rose, who appeared to be concentrating so hard she didn't see him staring at her, imagining what she was writing, knowing what she wrote almost every week. He didn't read her letters. There was no need. Rose told him not to share anything with him, but to gloat. She wanted him to know that when she was unhappy, she could turn to her brothers for reassurance. There was nothing they wouldn't do for her. Harry often wondered if there wasn't something more to this triangular relationship among Rose, Bob, and Max. Harry watched her from his soft armchair by the window. The plaid slipcover was torn. He couldn't remember the last time they replaced it. He stuck his finger in the hole while he regarded her, smiling to herself as she wrote, licking her lips over and over. Much of their furniture was from the store he managed, like the three-piece sectional sofa bed of light green fabric and the matching wing-back chair. Natty always curled up on the couch to do her homework, The girls' bedroom set and their kitchen table were all Laura's doing. He loved Rose despite her flirtatiousness with other men and her not-so-benign neglect of him and Natty. He was an educated, learned man, logical and intellectual, so this power Rose had over him was confusing and disturbing. He knew, like any man would, that her physical beauty counted for a lot. She knew how to charm and bedazzle men. But what else is there? Intelligence? Yes, but she was no intellectual, no reader. She didn't care about what went on beyond her own little world. Capability? Yes, when she was nursing, no one was better. Otherwise, she couldn't cook, and it was a boring conversationalist without convictions of her own. Even the ominous hints on the radio and in the papers about how the Nazis were treating the Jews in Europe didn't seem to interest her. She ignored him when he talked about such things and trivialized his worries. She was a poor listener, except when Laura or her brothers were talking. As he saw it, Rose gave Abby too much attention. She'd already been to several doctors in Brooklyn, but she'd rejected their advice. Abby had always been a difficult child, but Rose was reluctant to discipline her and scolded Harry when he tried to. It had become a Pavlovian cycle of Abby acting out, Rose responding by giving her even more affection and attention, resulting in more acting out. Rose told him she hated when the New York doctors called Abby a hysteric and herself a schizophrenic, genic mother. "Rose, how long do you plan to be away?" Harry said now. When she didn't answer, he asked again. Her mind already seemed to be lost in Cleveland. She finally raised her head and looked across the room at him. "I don't know, Harry. Abby must be my priority now. You don't seem to care that she's ill." "Why don't you care, Harry? Is it because Natty's your favorite, your pride and joy?" "Natty's fine. She doesn't need anything. It's Abby who needs my help." Then, with a deep sigh, she turned back to her letter. There was no use arguing. The girls were surely asleep, but still might awaken and hear them. He didn't want to raise his voice or have Rose raise hers to upset the children. Besides, they'd had this argument many times before. Rose assuaged her own guilt at neglecting him, and Natty by making him feel guilty for denying that Abby needed help. He replayed the mantra in his head. "You're the culprit, Rose. It's you that's at fault." Harry hated confrontation. As a teenager, it was his job to find out which bar his father was hiding in and drag him home, half conscious. Growing up, Harry was constantly trying to gauge his father's moods. When he was drunk, his father could destroy Harry's self-confidence with a whisper. It was Harry's mother who recognized his brilliance and coaxed his siblings into working to pay Harry's way through college and law school. His three brothers and one sister were happy to help out. They, too, saw Harry as the family's gem. Armed with a law degree, he would lift them out of poverty and into society. "What a failure I've been," he thought guiltily. Now his siblings were scattered across the country. He saw Ellen because she was in Brownsville, and he regularly gave her a few dollars when he could as a token of thanks. But Rose refused to go there or let Harry take the girls when he visited Ellen and her family. As the argument with Rose gave way to silence, Harry heard Abby's whispered voice in the other room. She was chanting random words. Tree, pencil, hat. One of the girls rustled the bedclothes. He brought his hand to his head and closed his eyes. Harry became ill while Rose was making all the travel arrangements. He felt excessively tired and worn out, although he was still relatively young, only 46. Rose diagnosed diabetes and confirmed it with a urine test at the hospital. "No more donuts, Harry. Nothing with sugar. I'll show you how to give yourself insulin, twice a day, in the belly. You can go blind or die if you're not careful." Harry wasn't surprised he'd gotten the sugar disease. His mother had it. He'd been warned by doctors that he might get it, especially if he didn't keep his weight down. He had little to enjoy in life besides his much-loved pancakes, Seal's donuts, and other sugary delights when he could get his hands on them. Pancakes were cheap and filling. He'd rather eat those than deprive his children of meat once or twice a week. Harry respected Rose's medical opinion, if very little else about her. She knew what she was talking about. He wasn't sure how much he would comply. He often thought the women in his life would be better off without him. Rose was thrilled when Bob found them an apartment, a block from Max's place in Cleveland. It was small, with a turnaround kitchen and a tiny bathroom. The girls could sleep on the fold-out couch. The junior high was across the street and the elementary school two blocks away. Rose wrote her Thursday letter to thank him and make the final arrangements. June 15, 1943. My wonderful Bob, you are the best. Now it's real. We have a place to live and schools nearby. I need to make the doctor's appointments for Abby, and then we can be on our way. Could you or Max pick us up from the train? I hope to arrive by next Monday. We'll have a couple of months to settle in before the girls start school. I can't wait to spend time with everyone there. It's been so dull here. I have a line on a private duty nursing job there. I'm waiting to hear for sure. I'll let you know when I have the train tickets. See you soon. Rose. It remained for her to tell Harry and the girls. It was obvious that Harry had not been taking her seriously. Whenever the topic of leaving arose, he got angry and accused her of ruining Abby, so she no longer talked about it. But now the trip was about to happen, and he would have to face facts. She picked an evening after he'd had a reasonably good day at the store. She was going to tell the girls in the morning. They would all have to leave to go to school and work with no time to argue or complain about the plans she'd made without consulting them. Rose put on a dress she knew Harry liked, since he didn't know Laura bought it for her. It was pink with fake pearl buttons lining a scoop neck collar. She wore her only pair of silk stockings, thanks to rationing, and white high heels she saved for special occasions. She showered and applied fresh makeup after getting home from her hospital shift. She knew she looked ravishing. Rose sidled up to Harry as he sat in his chair by the window, focused on the newspaper, shoes off, feet on the old ragged ottoman. She perched on the arm of the stuffed chair, one arm behind him on the back of the chair, the other in his lap. Then she crossed her beautiful legs and slowly twirled her feet inside slightly worn high heels. "We're going, Harry," she began softly. "We're going next week, in fact. I'm taking both girls. Bob found an apartment near Max. The schools are nearby. We'll have everything we need." She waited for his response, prepared for his anger. "Everything, Rose? You'll have everything you and the girls need?" He didn't look up from the paper, but spoke directly into it, trying to ignore her hand in his lap and the swinging legs. She'd done this before, every time she wanted something from him, and she wanted a lot. More money, newer clothes, a better house, all things she knew he couldn't provide. "Bob and Max have phones. You can call when you want to talk to us, and I can call you back. You know you'll be busy with the store anyway." Now she'd given up on seduction. She was all business. "How long will you be away?" he asked. The newspaper had fallen to the ground. He moved sideways in the chair to face her. "Why are you doing this, Rose?" Rose didn't reply, considering the matter finished. She had informed him. She really had no idea how long they'd be away. She needed time for herself and Abby, time to see where their lives were going, and most of all, time away from Harry. Just being in the same house with him depressed her. She kicked off her shoes, got up, straightened her dress, and carried her shoes to the bedroom, where she slipped off the dress and put on her house coat and slippers. Then she went back to the kitchen to finish cleaning up from dinner and close it up for the night. Harry sighed, knowing there was no use trying to talk further, knowing she wouldn't answer or say anything to comfort him. He picked up the paper but didn't read it. Instead, he cried inside for his children and his life. He didn't know how to fix this. The next morning, after the girls were dressed and had eaten, Rose beckoned to them to sit on the living room couch. "Guess what? We're going on a trip next week. We three girls are going to visit your cousins in Cleveland, Ohio. We'll have so much fun. Now, off you go to school." She ushered them out the door, pushing Natty gently on the back as she followed Abby. Natty turned. "Isn't Daddy coming?" Rose closed the door without answering and began to pack. It was the last week of school. It would be warm in Cleveland, at least for a few months. There really wasn't much of value to take, and Rose wanted to travel light. "Bob will buy anything we need, and it'll be so much nicer than anything we can get here," she thought. She had enough ration coupons and was determined to buy one new dress for herself and each of the girls so they wouldn't be ashamed when they arrived on the train. On the other hand, she thought, if Max saw how destitute they were, he'd take pity on her and sympathize with her decision to leave Harry. Bob might be even more generous than in the past. Seeing the girls with faded dresses and shoes too small for them might just work in her favor. She hated the idea of arriving in her old clothes. Even the pink dress she'd wore to seduce Harry was a year old. Women were fashionable in Cleveland. Her family might think she wasn't a good mother if she didn't buy new dresses for the girls. She'd have to give it more thought. She had half the day free and was going to work the evening shift. A quick stop at the shops on Belmont Avenue, she thought, might help me make a decision. When they left the following week, Harry kissed the girls and gave them his trademark bear hug. He smiled, but Rose could see tears in his eyes. He told the girls to be good and that he would write and call. "When will we see you again?" asked Natty. "I hope it will be soon, Natty. I know you'll have fun with your cousins. But I'll miss you very much," he said to both girls. The night before, Harry and Rose had argued loudly. "Rose, I know that you're brothers, but Bob and Max are no good. You know that, and I know that. Why won't you admit it? Now you're taking my children to live near them? Do you need fancy clothes and jewelry that much?" Harry had been livid with anger, red in the face, standing stiffly beside their double bed, his tie loosened, his shirt collar unbuttoned. They had been preparing for bed. He looked like he might hit her, but she knew Harry wouldn't hurt a fly. He'd been begging her to stay, but she had ignored him. "Rose, are you even listening to me? Do you care what I think?" he yelled. Rose was still in her house coat. She just finished rolling her hair and the pink curlers she kept on the dresser. She placed a pair of clean panties on her head to keep the rollers in place. She didn't look at him. "No, Harry, I don't care what you think. I think that was obvious by now. And how dare you say mean things about my brothers? They've been good to me. They make money. You don't." The argument had raged on, up and down the scale from loud to soft to cajoling to threatening. They'd take a breath every now and then to rest and regroup. Finally, Rose stopped talking in mid-sentence and slumped on the bed. "I'm going to try to sleep," she said. "We have an early train tomorrow. Good night." Harry finished undressing down to his boxer shorts and dress socks. He picked up their homemade quilt from the bedroom chair and went to the living room to sleep in his chair by the window. Rose didn't know that Natty had cried herself to sleep that night, clutching her empty pillowcase. In the morning, Abby didn't seem to have slept at all, but jumped excitedly up and down all around the bedroom, singing to herself a made-up song about going to Cleveland and getting frustrated because she couldn't get the words to rhyme. Except for Abby's exuberance, the atmosphere at breakfast was subdued. Thinking about it on the train, Rose couldn't remember what she'd eaten. But whatever it was, it still sat like a stone in her belly. Harry had bought their tickets on one of the few passenger cars on a Lackawanna Railroad freight train. Rose wore a long navy raincoat that she removed once she and the girls were settled in their hard seats, facing in the opposite direction than the train was going. Rose smiled at a man who was ready to take the seat. He smiled back and moved aside without a word. There was just enough room on the bench seat to fit her and the girls and a bit of lunch. Rose wore her new pastel green dress under the raincoat. The color showed off her green eyes to great effect. The fake emerald earrings were stunning against the prematurely snow-white hair she refused to color, and perfectly matched the new faux emerald necklace she'd purchased in the same store where she'd bought the dress. She felt guilty about the girls. She hadn't bought them new dresses. Perhaps Bob would give her money to buy them clothes in Cleveland. Rose decided it was not her fault that Harry was unhappy and couldn't find work as an attorney. If he cared enough about Abby, he'd be pleased that she was trying to get her help and relieved to not have to supervise Natty. She couldn't help but feel a little remorseful when Harry gave Abby and Natty each a tie from his closet. He must have known this was a silly gift to give two young girls, but maybe he thought the ties would remind them of him. Abby had accepted hers with a smirk. It was dark brown with diamond shapes of lighter brown scattered all over it. When Harry had given it to her, he'd kissed her cheek and said, "I wish I had something more to give you to remember me by. I hope this will work for now. I love you, Abby." "I can't wear it. What am I supposed to do with it anyway?" Abby had whined. Natty, holding the gray, green, and maroon striped tie Harry had given her, had said, "It's to remind us of Daddy, Abby. You're not supposed to wear it, silly." She had lifted it to her nose and inhaled her father's smell. The tie smelled like his aftershave. "Thanks, Daddy. I love it," Natty had said while putting it in her bag. Now on the train, Rose was excited. She knew her brothers would dote on her and she wouldn't have to live with Harry's depressing disappointment day after day. She deserved an easier life. She thought back to when she went to parties and had fashionable clothes. She couldn't remember anymore what had attracted her to Harry in the first place. Rose remembered how thrilled she had been when Bob got paroled from the Ohio Penitentiary after serving only a year and 8 months. Bob himself had called her with the news. Max had sent her an article from the Cleveland Plains Dealer describing the lawsuit against Bob by the real Frank Sanchetta, the only man of that name in Cleveland, for using his name, damaging his reputation, and hurting his chances for employment. The paper quoted Bob saying he didn't want to use his own name because he didn't want to be associated with men like Jaime Barrington. "After all," he said, "there isn't much in a name." Bob lost the suit. Rose laughed when she read it. "Bob is so clever," she thought. The girls squirmed on the hard train seat and grew increasingly impatient to arrive in Cleveland. They ate the snacks she had brought while the train stood still in Buffalo. Both girls read and looked out the window. They giggled about the other people on the train, especially the large, bald conductor who had to turn sideways to get down the aisle. He used a big, bellowing voice to call each stop. He seemed to like his job, smiling at the girls whenever he waddled by. They also whispered about the young woman sitting beside a young man in the next aisle. She was dressed in a beautiful pale pink suit with a matching cloche hat and sparkling silvery earrings. Three strands of pearls fit perfectly within the scoop neckline of her silky white blouse. Her makeup was minimal and flawless with pale pink lipstick that set off her blue eyes and rosy cheeks. She sat primly with her white-gloved hands crossed over the white beaded handbag perched on her knees. Every so often, the girl saw her smile to herself, look at the young man beside her, and sigh. "She's so pretty. I love her suit," whispered Natty. "I love her earrings, but they don't go with the pearl necklace," Abby answered. The young man sat stiffly as if afraid to move and shatter the lovely tableau made by the woman beside him. He wore a light summer suit, off-white with a white shirt and a blue tie with taupe circles. His shirt collar looked as if it were near to choking him. A dying pink carnation drooped from his left lapel buttonhole. He wore light brown shoes that shone brightly in the sun from the train window. "He looks nervous," said Natty, when she noticed the young man edging slightly forward on the seat, holding his hand stiffly between his knees. Natty imagined he must be thinking about whatever would happen when they got off the train. He didn't seem to notice when the young woman beside him glanced at him sideways. Occasionally, he rocked back and forth, and, maybe to remind himself not to do that, he sat up straight again for a few more minutes until he started rocking again. "I wish he'd stop doing that," whispered Abby. "He's making me nervous." The man and the woman each wore a plain gold ring on the ring fingers of their left hands. "She has beautiful hands," thought Natty, who didn't like her own hands. Her fingers were short and thick, more like workmen's hands. "Oh, Abby, they must have just gotten married. I bet they're on their honeymoon. Isn't that romantic?" "I don't know. He makes me nervous." "I hope he doesn't make her nervous," replied Abby. "He's probably nervous because they just got married. Oh, I hope they'll be happy," gushed Natty. Unlike Rose, the girls couldn't see past the couple's clothes to the story hidden behind them. Rose guessed they were poor, and their wedding clothes were probably borrowed or made over. No one with money rode the Lackawanna freight train. Rose glanced wistfully at them, thinking back to her own honeymoon to Niagara Falls. Life was simpler then. She envied the young couple, but also resented their naivete and happiness. Rose began to talk to the girls as the train got closer to Cleveland. She hadn't spoken much on the trip up to this point, other than to remind them what a nice time they would have in Cleveland and to tell them about their schools. It had been a very long 8-hour train ride. She began to straighten the girls' clothing. "You've met your uncles and their wives before when they came to visit us, but I don't know if you'll remember them. They're easygoing, but don't embarrass me by forgetting your manners, and don't say anything about your father," said Rose. "Why can't we talk about Daddy?" asked Natty. "Because we're taking a break from Daddy, that's why," thought Rose. Natty looked at her in that moment as if she hated her. "She's only 10 years old. What does she know about marriage?" thought Rose. Now, Rose regretted not buying the girls' new dresses. She had watched them look admiringly at the young couple across the aisle, especially at the woman's pink suit and jewelry. She felt a wave of sorrow sweep over her. How could she selfishly buy clothes for herself and not for her daughters? She decided she would ask Bob for some money first thing tomorrow and get them each something new. They watched the young couple get up at the next stop. The young man pulled down their suitcases from the rack above their heads, and as if he were going into battle, straightened his clothes and resolutely clasped the young woman's hand in his. As they made their way to the door, she smiled at him, and he smiled back. The next station was Rose's stop. As she, Abby, and Natty walked up the aisle, they could smell urine. Natty, following behind her, could see the stains on her sister's skirt. The odor permeating the car announced their shame to everyone. Rose pushed others aside and quickly shuffled the girls off the train and into the station. There was a small room with a toilet there, which thankfully proved to be empty. Rose clucked and fussed as she helped Abby change her clothes. Rose handed Natty her handkerchief. "Go clean up the mess, Natty." "Me? Abby did it. Why do I have to clean it up?" "Do as I say, Natty," commanded Rose. Natty felt too embarrassed and disgusted to do what her mother asked. Instead, she waited on the platform for Abby and her mother to emerge from the bathroom. She watched the people exiting the train, hoping they wouldn't associate her with what had happened. Her mother need never know that Natty hadn't done what she'd been told to do. Natty didn't care, anyway. Her mother and Abby were in their own world. Natty usually felt jealous, but now she felt lucky. She could pretend she was not with them. While she waited, Natty thought about the young couple, the long train ride, Abby's incident, and her father. He's many miles away now and all alone. How will he manage? She was old enough to know that diabetics shouldn't eat pancakes with syrup. She knew he wouldn't take care of himself because he was so unhappy. She dreaded leaving the train station where she'd been able to pretend this was a short day trip to the countryside, and she would soon be back sitting on her father's lap in his big chair. Leaving the station meant a new life with different people, a new school without her friends or the kids on the street. She thought about hiding behind a seat on a train headed to New York. Would anyone here miss me? She thought. In the bathroom, after tidying Abby, Rose reapplied her lipstick and powdered her face. Finally, she used red lipsticks to add some blush to her cheeks. Back on the platform, Rose recognized Max at the far end. He wore a black fedora with a silk band, a green vest, a light-colored plaid suit jacket, trousers, his signature bow tie, and two-tone black and tan shoes. Max held a lit cigar between the second and third fingers of his left hand. Rose tucked stray hairs behind her ears, checked her compact mirror to make sure there was no lipstick on her teeth, and began to walk toward Max. She carried her makeup case, leaving the other luggage on the platform where the porter had left it. The girls were following behind her, each carrying their small bag of books and magazines that had kept them busy on the train. Rose saw Max chatting with a young woman who must have just exited the train, but she didn't think he'd seen her yet. "That woman is far too young and good-looking for him," she thought. He was glancing at the young woman's dress and then back to her full bosom and clear complexion. "So like him," Rose thought. Rose started to walk more quickly, losing the girls in the crowd behind her. "Max! Oh, Max! We're here, Max!" she called, waving her white-gloved hand in the air. In the meantime, Abby's gaze was wandering as she surveyed the commotion caused by people exiting the train and others trying to board it. Natty could tell she was becoming agitated, so she grabbed Abby's hand and pushed their way through the crowd. It was just like their mother to forget them completely. "Max, don't you hear me? We're here. We finally arrived." Max heard Rose shout as she got closer. He was forced to divert his gaze from the young woman when he was just about to ask if he could visit her soon. He loved Rose, but she was a bit ditzy, oblivious to other people's concerns. He worried she would see what was going on and playfully threatened to tell his wife. "I'll have to promise her a new bauble to keep her mouth shut." It was the game they'd been playing since they were kids. "Ah, Rose," he said, glancing in her direction while taking gentle hold of the young woman's hands. "I'm sorry, she's my sister, come all the way from Brooklyn. I came to pick her up. It's been so nice meeting you. I'd love to see you again." "Max, it's so great to see you," cried Rose, ignoring the young woman while sweeping herself into his half-embrace. The other woman turned away, melting quickly into the thinning crowd. Rose thought she was happy to be rid of this middle-aged, balding, overweight man. She watched as Max called out to the girl. He gave up when she didn't turn around and finally focused his attention on Rose. "Where are the girls? Did you lose them?" Rose and Max scanned the platform as the train pulled away. Most of the people who debarked had already left the platform, so it wasn't hard to spot Natty heading their way with Abby in tow. "Girls, what happened to you? I thought you were right behind me," said Rose. Max took the luggage from the porter and led the way to the parking lot. It was a real homecoming when Rose entered the tiny apartment with Max and the girls to find Izzy and Bob sitting at the small kitchen table. "Ah, here she is, our little princess," said Bob as he got up to hug her. "Hello, Rosie," said Izzy, waiting his turn. The girls were hugged and cheeks were pinched until they were allowed to drift down the hall into what would be Rose's bedroom. It took several minutes before Rose could get her bearings and survey the apartment. It was cozy with one bedroom, a turnaround kitchen, and a tiny living room. The shared bathroom was down the hall. Thankfully, everything was clean and tidy, but she suddenly missed her home in Brooklyn. It was huge by comparison. "It's great to see you and the girls, Rose," said Sylvia, Max's wife, as Rose entered the kitchen, followed by Sadie. "Gladys is in Los Angeles this week, but she said to tell you hello." Sylvia, tall and thin, was dressed in a floral print dress, a mixture of pinks, blues, and greens against a white background. It fell just below the knee. Her apron was white and trimmed in eyelet. Rose noticed her black patent leather high heels. "A bit formal for the occasion, aren't they?" she thought. "Sylvia can get real stockings despite rationing, but why wear them on such a warm day?" Sadie, short and plump, looked years older than Sylvia, though she was younger by only two. She wore a cream-colored day dress with workaday shoes, not unlike the nurse's shoes Rose wore to work, but Sadie's were light brown. Her fading brown hair piled on her head and held with pins completed the monochromatic look, very much in contrast to Sylvia's stylishness. Nevertheless, Rose knew the two women were close, and they both got along well with Gladys. As different as they were, they did not seem jealous of each other. Rose wouldn't mind if they were jealous of her, but that wasn't likely. "I'm so glad we finally arrived. It was a long trip. I know the girls are very tired. I know I am. Thanks for getting us the apartment, Bob," said Rose wearily. "Hey, what about me, Rosie? What am I, chopped liver?" laughed Izzy. Rose put an arm around his waist and gave him a hug. With her heels on, she was slightly taller than Izzy. "I've missed you, Rosie," Izzy said softly. "Well," said Sylvia, hands on hips, "we've plenty of time to catch up. Let's let you get settled. There are a few groceries in the icebox. The store's one block west. You can send the girls out for more tomorrow." Bob threw some bills on the table. "This should get you started, Rosie. There's more where that came from. I'll see you this weekend. Love you." Rose was relieved not to have to ask him for money, although she knew he would never refuse. Izzy gave Rose a nod and tipped his hat. Max fell in behind him. Sylvia removed the apron and put on her sweater and hat. Sadie moved to the closet to retrieve hers. They all walked through the shadowy hallway into the gathering dusk. Nattie was disappointed about the sofa bed. This meant Abby would sleep right next to her and bother her all night. She felt very tired and confused. After everyone left, she lay down on the couch and closed her eyes. It was past supper time. They'd had no solid meal, only the homemade snacks on the train. It seemed like ages ago. Nattie fantasized that she'd hidden behind a seat on the train that was barreling back toward home. She would have willingly walked back from the train station if it meant being in Brownsville with her father. She was mad at herself for chickening out. Abby didn't seem to be tired. She was scurrying around the apartment, touching everything. The two small plywood dressers, the small corner desk, and the hand-sewn duvet thrown across the overstuffed chair next to the couch. "Could you keep still for 1 minute?" cried Nattie. Abby ignored her and ran out of the room to find their mother, who was busying herself pulling things out of the icebox and assembling their first dinner in the new apartment. Rose was relieved to not have to observe kosher rules. Sylvia had done a good job buying food the girls would like. She could whip up a cold meal tonight, some green salad and lox and bagels. Tomorrow, she'd cook. Natty slept fitfully, with Abby waking her every 15 minutes to ask her the time or for a drink of water. The next morning, Rose dropped the girls off at Izzy's house. After getting some more groceries with the money Bob had given her, Rose returned to the apartment to put on the dress she'd worn on the train. It was a little stale, but she needed to look her best for her new private duty patient. She took the trolley to the fifth stop and knocked on the big oak door of an imposing brick multifamily home. If this works out, she thought, I'll probably walk to work. The trolley is just too expensive. The door was opened by a weary-looking middle-aged woman wearing a faded floral house dress. The graying hair piled on her head was escaping from hairpins stuck haphazardly here and there. She wore old pink mules. Are you the nurse? She asked. Yes, I'm Rose. We talked on the phone. I arrived yesterday. Hello, Rose. I'm Edith. I'm sorry I'm not in a better state to welcome you, but I'm caring for my mother night and day. There's no point in dressing up because I just get dirty all over again, she said with a laugh. I'm glad you're here. Please come this way. We're on the top floor. The Brazeltons are on the first floor, and the Lipinskis are in the middle. They're all usually out working during the day, so it should be fairly quiet while you're here. Rose followed Edith up three long flights of stairs, noting the poor lighting and dusty corners. Her heels clacked on the checkered steps as they climbed. The smell of cabbage was distinct and unpleasant. The white paint on the staircase was peeling, but everything looked reasonably clean. She stopped on the second landing so Edith could take a few deep breaths. Rose could smell cigarette smoke as Edith hacked out two long, mucus-filled coughs. She was tempted to lecture her on the evils of smoking and pat her back to help her breathe. Rose took her role as a nurse more seriously than she did those of wife and mother. She frequently passed people on the street, observing their complexions for cyanosis, excessive ruddiness, or pallor. She once told a man in the post office to go immediately to the hospital because she decided his labored respiration signified a bad case of pneumonia. Back in Brownsville, people were used to this and welcomed her advice. She'd have to tread carefully here so she didn't upset anyone and lose this much-needed position. Edith finally swung the door open to the third-floor apartment. Rose was relieved to see it was clean and well-tended. A single bed occupied by a very obese woman took up most of the living room. The woman was sleeping on her left side, snoring loudly. The linens had been tossed to the side and hung over the edge of the bed. The patient appeared to be comfortable in a simple, transparent white shift. One leg sprawled over the side of the bed with the linens, the other, amputated below the knee, resting on pillows. Rose began to assess the patient. Edith offered her tea, coffee, or water, all of which she declined. She never ate patients' food or drank what they offered. She had no way of ensuring it was sanitary. As I recall, the patient's name is Sandy, right? Asked Rose, as she gently tapped the woman's shoulder to awaken her. Sandy, the nurse is here. Can you wake up so she can meet you? Called Edith. After tapping the now supine patient several times with no response, Rose grasped both of Sandy's shoulders, trying to shake her awake. Sandy, Sandy, it's time to wake up now. Both hazel eyes opened gradually. The patient slowly grasped the metal bar dangling over the bed and hoisted herself up to a sitting position. Rose watched without moving to assist. She wanted to see what the patient could do by herself. The transparent shift rode up to the woman's thighs, revealing several bulging varicose veins. Are you the nurse? Really? You look so beautiful. You can't be the nurse. My last nurse wore a uniform. You're all dressed up. Edith, look at her. Can you believe this? She'll be afraid to get her hands dirty. Where'd you get her from, the modeling agency? Sandy laughed, showing a variety of gaps in both her upper and lower gums. Sandy, stop your clowning. This is Rose. She's a very experienced nurse. She dressed up for you today. Isn't that nice? Nice to make your acquaintance, Sandy, offered Rose, while grasping Sandy's right hand and looking over the color of the skin, checking its temperature and turgor. I can assure you I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty, but I don't think we'll have that problem while I'm taking care of you. Now, regarding my shifts, I understand you have a night nurse, so I'll be here during the day, 3 days a week, as you and I agreed, Edith. Yes, that's right. I'll be here on the other days. I just need some time to do the shopping and visit my grandchildren. So 3 days should be perfect, responded Edith. Okay, then, I can start next week if that suits you. I'm still moving in and getting my children settled. Now, I'd like to see your medication, Sandy. Do you give yourself insulin, or does Edith do that? Rose reviewed all the medications, then deferred the rest of her assessment until the next visit. She had already drawn several conclusions. Sandy clearly had uncontrolled diabetes, resulting in an amputation. Her somnolence and difficulty waking were other indications of the poorly controlled disease. Her obesity wasn't helping. Sandy's diet was probably very poor. Rose guessed she had high blood pressure and poor circulation. After signing the contract, Rose gingerly walked down the stairs to the warm street. She had just enough time to take the trolley back to the apartment, change her clothes, and pick the girls up before making supper. She couldn't help but think of Harry as she made her way home. Sandy was only a few steps ahead of them as they both spiraled downward toward a miserable end. She sensed a twinge of guilt beginning to take root inside of her for leaving Harry to wallow in sugar and misery. She decided to ignore the feeling. She'd chosen Abby's needs over her husband's. She'd assuage her guilt by sending home a bit of the money she'd make. Rose knew that she and the girls would be in Cleveland for a long time. Natty and Abby might have to be home alone a few hours after school until Rose completed her shift, unless her parents or other relatives could take them in.